Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here, host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. Always a privilege and a pleasure to come before you. And my goodness gracious, folks, things with the economy and the dollar are going from bad to worse. And interestingly enough, we have a sponsor for this show. And let me tell you about Noble Gold very quickly. I've been advertising for Noble Gold for about 5 years, and I have to tell you that I've been a customer for four. And I've been a customer for 4 years because Noble Gold has my best interest at heart. They can protect retirement with a conversion to a gold-backed IRA or 401k. A qualifying effort will get you a 5 ounce coin, a silver coin, just for a gift to say thank you. But also, too, they can protect your assets in your bank account. And you say, well, why would they need to do that? Well, if you have to ask me that, then you don't know about the Dodd-Frank law of 2010 that says the banks can steal your money. They declare you to be an unsecured creditor when you put your money or retirement associated with the bank, and they can take it from you. Mostly they'll devalue it, I think. But do you want to take that risk? Seriously. Noble Gold can get you out of all of this mess and protect your nest egg. And if you care about protecting your nest egg, let us send you some literature. And you say, well, what would you send? It's electronic. Just go to DaveHodgesGold.com, DaveHodgesGold.com, and we will send you from Noble Gold information prospectus that tells you what they do, how it works in layman's terms, and then you can call the number that's on the package. And you say, well, that sounds pretty easy. Well, yeah, but I don't think you got a lot of time because as you're going to hear on today's show, the French are calling for Europe to basically ditch the dollar. Yeah, that adds to all the other countries that are doing the same thing. So I would move quickly. Now, I have to give you this disclaimer from the federal government that they tell us that we have to say that investments are inherently risky and that past performance can be not indicative of future performance. And that would apply to Noble Gold or any other kind of investment. And I agree with issuing the warning, but I just want to say one thing to you. I've been a customer for 4 years. And we're going to do a couple of adjustments over the next couple of weeks in the Hodges household. So obviously I give them our highest endorsement. And speaking of Noble Gold, guess what? We have their CEO on, Colin Plume. And we're going to talk about the dollar under attack and what role gold is going to play in the coming future economy. Colin, thanks for joining us, my friend. I don't think your appearance could be any more timely.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Yeah, a lot obviously. We've had a number of countries looking to move away from the dollar, ditch the dollar, and the BRIC nations have been. I mean, they've been trying. You and I have talked about it for many years. They've been trying to move away from the dollar, but we see more momentum happening. It seems to be becoming more serious. And then, obviously, what happened with the French president this morning. You know, quite shocking to hear that news because, you know, you would think, you know, France is more of an ally in a number of different ways, but obviously they believe that the dollar is running into some trouble.
You know, Colin, at one time I was thinking to myself, okay, the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and friends, including Saudi Arabia. A lot of those nations, including Mexico, they're moving away from the dollar. India is moving away from the dollar, and they've taken 18 nations with them. And I thought, okay, well, at least we have Europe. And now that's under threat. You know, the only one that's really left now that I'm not too worried about is Canada.
Right, right. Yeah, no, you're right. It's interesting. I think that when you look at the reasoning behind why all these countries are moving away from it is it's probably multiple layers. Obviously our heavy inflation is a factor, right? I mean, it has to be a factor. If you're a country that is heavily laden in US treasuries or US debt, you're disappointed in what's going on because you're the debt that you bought or the debt that you bought years ago is worth, you know, next to nothing, right? In terms of, you know, what we're seeing in usually countries that look at the strength, you know, because all central banks have to have stable assets, is you have a situation where a lot of these countries are too heavy in U.S. Investments. And so they're disappointed in the return. So that's affecting them. Obviously, it's affecting their bottom line, and that's a big part of this. Similar to what we saw with the banks, the, you know, a few of these banks, they were too heavy in U.S. Treasuries at very low returns, with inflation at 7-8%, and the bond market moving significantly higher, you know, 4-6%. So a lot of it has to do with, you know, the value of money for central banks, because you have to ask yourself, like, what's really the driver of this? Like, it's a monumental move to move away from a currency, and so you have to think that it's going to take time. They have to have a strategy in place, and then the other thing, the new currency has to, in theory, do better, right? I mean, that you don't want to go to a currency that's going to do worse. And the euro, in a lot of estimations, was a big flop, which is one of the biggest currencies that came about. Obviously, it's been, you know, 20 years now since the euro came about, but no, maybe it hasn't been 20 years, maybe like more like 15 years. So I think that it's not a simple move, but it seems like there's a lot of momentum happening. And then obviously, there's a bill in Texas, also, where they want to have a digital currency that's backed by gold, in the depository of Texas. So there's a lot of different things happening, a lot of different countries, states, that are looking to divest and move away from the US dollar at this point.
That is just incredible to me that this is even happening. I'm almost I'm at a loss for words, and I'll tell you why. The U.S., when Reagan was here, re reached a pinnacle of power. We declined. Trump comes in. We reestablish dominance in many different ways. And these last 2 years plus with Biden have been the dismantling of the United States. And I'm reading today that Jamie Dixon is predicting that gold is going to reach $2,100 an ounce. Do you think that's related to the problems we're discussing?
Well, it's been flirting with 2,000, right? That's the number it hit. It hit during the pandemic, October of 2020, and then it pulled back for a few years, and now we're hovering just under. I think we're at 1990 today, so it's been flirting around 2,000 for a while, and you know, trying to create a new floor, in my opinion, of that 2,000 number. So I think 2,100 is absolutely conservative in terms of pricing. I think they're setting their numbers low because I think it'll blow through to probably 2,200 or 2,300 at some point this year, and then maybe it pulls back to 2,100. But ultimately, what we're seeing is that all of these, the world right now is testing the waters, and I think a lot of it has to do with what happened, this revolution that started in 2008, and the whole crypto revolution really set a different mindset of the world, that we don't have to be tied so much to certain currencies. And this idea of having currencies that are more independent and have some advantages for everyday people, because you and I talk about this a lot, Dave, is that savers. And the thing that people did 40, 50, 60 years ago, where they put money in a bank, they'd save for retirement. That mentality, that person today doesn't have any advantages, unfortunately. They have so many disadvantages. So the idea that all of these countries, the BRIC nations, Texas, they're all trying to get a piece of the pie is one way to look at it, or they're all trying to change the dynamic of being tied to the US currency. It is really a new mindset of the world, because by the BRIC nations, let's say they create this new currency, they can trade, they can have some fluidity within themselves, and they don't always have to move money back into the dollar. That gives them a significant advantage, because if they're always moving back to the dollar and we stay at 8 or 9% inflation, that's a big disadvantage for them. Now, let's talk about what could fix this problem, Dave. If we could get our economy running again, I believe a lot of this talk sort of goes away. I think that if they lower interest rates, and I know they say inflation, they can't do it, but I think at this point it's desperate times. I think if they need to lower interest rates, they need to get the US economy cooking again. And in my opinion, once that happens, I think the cost of goods would actually go down. Now, I'm not saying go back to, home mortgages at 2.5%, but I think they need to generate businesses again where they're not so afraid to hire, they're not so afraid to build infrastructure, they're not so afraid to grow. And I think a lot of this talk kind of goes away. I think a lot of it goes away. I think a lot of it's just, it's they're all everyone's reacting to this heavy inflation. They're reacting to, people getting very conservative out there. The stock market's obviously not doing well. The real estate market's not doing, you have all these massive markets not doing well. So I think we need to kind of regenerate, get this economy, this big engine moving again. And in my opinion, some of this talk goes away. Now, I don't know if they're going to do that, because the Fed has made it clear if they're not at, their job is to get it to 2% inflation. And until they do that, they're going to keep interest rates high. But I think in today's day and age, that 2% number is unrealistic. And I don't think we're getting back there anytime soon.
Well, I don't know if we can get back there at all. I have a little more fatalistic view. Let me give you a couple things to respond to in that regard. First of all, 60% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, and some economists say that's a low-end estimate, but that's what the polls tell us, 60%. And then you've got a situation where we have $32 trillion in debt, and the only backing we have is for people to use the dollar in trade. Particularly with the petrodollar, and that seems to be almost going towards extinction. And my fear is this, is that the Weimar Republic will repeat in the United States if the dollar is totally ditched because we have no backing and
Right.
we'll hyperinflate. I mean, am I being catastrophic?
No, I agree with you. And I think that's why the Fed's been sort of nervous about not lowering rates. But I do think that there is a bigger picture thing that we have to think about is that I think our growing economy, our growing GDP sort of trumps all. And so a lot of things, important things are going to happen. And I've been saying it. I think at the end of this year they're going to lower interest rates no matter what, because I think the elections are coming, and I think they're going to try to move some things around, because obviously if certain people want, a certain president to stay in, they're not going to be able to keep it with the way this economy is. So I think they shift anyway. But I do think that if we don't fix our problems right now and we lose currency, if we lose currency power, and that's what it looks like we're doing right now today, we're losing currency power in the world, that will trigger that we're not, the number one economy anymore. And you're right, we could go into a hyperinflationary period. And we saw it start to happen during COVID. We saw some blockchain issues, but we haven't seen inflation like 14, 15%, at least reported in this country yet. And that would really put everything to a standstill, because there's no way real estate's coming back in that situation. There's no way the stock market's coming back for years. I mean, it would really, we would be really depleted in that situation. And then let's just talk about unemployment. If we go to higher inflation, employers aren't going to be willing to hire. They're just not going to be in a position to do it. Their cost of the goods that they need to manufacture, that they need to ship out, is going to go up dramatically, and they're just not going to be able to afford to add more staff. And so it's we're in a predicament here, Dave, in this country, and we need to figure out a solution quick. And it needs to be we need to be focused on being more business friendly. And we need to address these issues with the currency. We can't just lay back and just think that it's going to get fixed, because that's how we became the world's reserve currency during the Bretton Woods exchange. I mean, Great Britain, they had a lot of problems from World War II. Some of it was a hangover from World War I, and they had heavy inflation. Their economy wasn't growing, and they lost that status in 1944. So we're, in a position now too where we're, we could lose that status too. Now, on the positive side, we have time, because the BRIC nation currency is not out there. The currency that they're talking about in Texas is not out there. It's going to take time. It's going to take time to have a currency out there. But we need to address these problems immediately for us to turn this economy around.
Well, you say we have time, and I think on that end of it, you're right. But You've got 14067, Executive Order 14067, bringing in digital currency, central bank digital currency to be exact. And the Fed now starts between May and July. And a lot of people think that the digital currency will be right on the heels of that. That would kind of, wouldn't that just circumvent everything that's going on? I mean, I think I could send gold, I'll exaggerate here, to $10,000 an ounce simply because people don't want to be in digital.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, I think that people, and how do they create a digital environment with a currency that people can trust? And how do they just not inflate it like we did with the dollar? I mean, are we just creating a whole new problem? So that's why what's happening in Texas is sort of interesting. I think it'll be interesting to see if they continue to move forward. But the idea that, they'd have a digital currency, so they don't have to print anything, which they save money on, and then but that digital currency is backed by ounces of gold that's held in their depository. It could get a little momentum, and I wouldn't be surprised if people start using those currencies locally, especially in Texas, and then we'll see where that takes off if it gets more exciting and people want to use that more for the whole U.S. But Texas has always had this independent thinking. I think what they're doing there is really smart. They obviously moved a lot of the Bitcoin mining to Texas. They opened up their arms and said, "Come here, and we'll give you a place to do business." And then they have a lot of manufacturing and industrial. And if they have their own currency that starts to take off, it could be a real hub for business, for finance. And so maybe the new hub for finance is moving away from the East Coast and moving down south into Texas there.
Interesting. And there's a lot of separatist talk in Texas. I don't really see that happening, but it's beginning to grow. And I think the more that people talk about this, though, the less confidence they have in the dollar. So I worry about domestic confidence. Let me give you another example. Florida's taking steps that if you look at it just on the face of what they're doing, they're separating from the federal government. Now, I'm not saying they're going to be a separatist South Carolina kind of movement and we're going to see Fort Sumter, but what I'm saying is DeSantis is what I call federalizing the proof against Biden and creating barriers to federal interference.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at states like Texas, you look at states like Florida, and they're creating an environment where people want to live. I mean, the biggest exodus pretty much all over the country. If you look at where all those U-Haul trucks are going, they're all going to Texas, they're all going to Florida, they're all going to Nevada. They're creating an environment where people that want to continue their life in a way where they're growing, they want forward thinking. They're moving into these states, and I think if you see people continue to move in these states, and they're continuing to getting revenue there, they're opening up, like I said, to large corporations. I agree with you, and I think like it really is coming down to today is that because so many people are working and they don't have to be in a certain place necessarily for work. Now there'll be a 10 or 15% of jobs that you have to be somewhere to do that job, but the rest of the jobs are remote. What's going to stop more and more people to continue to move to these places because they see that there's more opportunity there. They see that there's still a lot of affordable places to live in Texas, there's a lot in Florida to live. So that American dream that you and I, have been striving for is still attainable in these places because of what they're doing on the business side, on the finance side, and then just focusing on creating a strong economy. Which is, what I think everybody wants. And I think that's what, like a state like California has really gone against. I mean, I think, you look at economies, it used to be this great economy and, in California, but they've just created such high tax, so many regulations. I mean, so many different things that are happening out there and really put this state in a position where they're going to lose a lot of talent. And I think that's really that talent is really moving to these up and coming states.
Yeah, that is there is going to be a brain drain. You know, the
Exactly.
joke is California is only going to be left with illegal immigrants. And and I'm not trying to cast aspersions upon them, but we're not getting doctors and lawyers and physicists coming out of Central and South America and, you know, Haiti and Africa. And, do you know, just kind of an aside for a second, you know, the number one group being apprehended at the border now? Chinese nationals.
I didn't know
Isn't
that.
that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah, that shocked me. That, but I heard this from, I have two Border Patrol sources, and one of them had told me this, and it's in the major thrust is in his sector. And then I'm flying along here and I'm looking at Fox News like 3 weeks later, and they said the same thing. And I said, wow. And they're coming across the northern border too. So I thought that was interesting. Well, going back to something totally unrelated to what I thought we were going to talk about, but you triggered a thought in me. As AI begins to replace jobs,
Right.
what effect do you think that'll have on the price of the gold? What will it do to the economy in general?
I think that AI in general, we're going to have to see a massive shift in what people are doing. And if you look at some of those lists of the jobs, I don't know if you've seen some of those lists of the most likely jobs to be affected, but there's some pretty massive sectors like accountants, bookkeepers. A lot of that stuff will most of it will be done through technology. Obviously, we're seeing some of the manufacturing jobs move in that direction. A lot of middle management jobs, which is you're seeing in the tech area a lot. Those layoffs have been across the board, but a lot of those positions have been in sort of higher paying middle management positions. So a lot of those jobs are sort of going away. I think in terms of gold right now, and it's so interesting because people ask me all the time, like, what, how's gold doing? What's going on with gold? If they're not, let's say they have their head in the sand and they haven't seen the bank crisis and they haven't seen everything that's happening. And I always say it's really gold is almost it's in a unique class of its own because it's going to go up over time just because it has a limited supply and gold has so many more industrial uses than it used to have. But also, it's just like every year, and we've been talking, doing this for 6 years in a row, every year there's some trigger event that gets people looking at gold again. From the bank crisis to COVID to, I mean, you can go down the list, heavy inflation. So it seems like now in this economy, because things are changing so rapidly that the stock market right now has not been a great place for the last 2 years for most people. People are really looking for a different investment. And so I always tell people that when I started the business almost 14 years ago, it was like a fringe investment almost. Like it was an alternative. No one really talked about it. And now, they talk about it, on Fox Business and see, all these places that never talked about it are talking about it now. So I think that there will be a continued push in the gold and silver sector. You mentioned gold hitting 10,000. I mean, I think, obviously if this movement of the dollar continues, it could go hyperbolic, in my opinion, because the goal of central banks, the goal of funds, the goal of endowments at that point, those investors that buy treasury bonds, that buy bonds, that buy really conservative investments, they won't be able to put their money in those investments during that time period. They won't feel comfortable. The markets, the bond markets, everything will be so volatile that those investors will have to move into something like gold. Maybe they'll move into something like oil or something else too, but they're not going to be able to stay in the traditional markets if the dollar really does lose its status as the world's reserve currency. And so I do believe that they will move some into gold, and that'll have a really positive effect on the metal.
Is there a point where nations like China and the big banks who are hoarding gold, is there a point where people aren't going to be able to get it?
I mean, I think it's always a fear that we could run out, and that certain countries that have it, wouldn't want to sell it, that they would just keep it internally. I think the U.S. in a lot of ways is sort of unique in the world. The U.S. and India is there's not a lot of countries, frankly, and this is sort of surprising, where actually individuals buy gold. The U.S. is sort of unique, even though they say less than 3% of Americans actually own physical gold themselves. It is more here in the U.S. than a lot of other places. A lot of other places, I mean, you go to the UK, there's nobody there that owns gold. It's literally, it's unless, you know, you have maybe a few billionaires or people that are sort of separate, but your day-to-day person, they don't talk about it. They don't think about it. So I think we're better positioned as citizens here because we've always had this sort of mindset of being independent. India too. I mean, India, citizens of India have been buying gold for, you know, obviously centuries. Now they're buying silver. I think I mentioned last time on your show that they opened up a silver ETF last year and it sold unbelievably, sold over many times over because the people there really understand the value of these precious metals. But we are better as citizens. We are better prepared. And obviously with this bank crisis, what a lot of people did is they called us and we shipped gold to them. And they just said, you know, I don't want the money in the bank. And then, you know, a few years down the road, if they need the money for whatever, they'll sell it back to us or they'll sell it anywhere they want or they'll move somewhere else and sell the gold and it'll have value anywhere in the world because we sell bullion coins and bars. So a lot of people just said, I'm getting out of the banks, some of my money out of the banks, and I'm going to divest into gold and just be safe so I don't have to worry about it. So I don't have to be concerned that I'm trusting an entity like this, one of these banks to do the right thing or keep my money. So we saw a tremendous uptick in just, you know, direct investment sales where people are just getting gold delivered to their doorstep.
Yeah, that's a really good argument there. I agree with that. Let me shift over to the volatile topic. And I know neither one of us have a crystal ball, but you've got bonds going down and down and down. And we know a lot of the banks have made their fortune on bonds, and they're getting killed by this. And then other banks, another category like SVB, but they're not alone, have gone totally woke and ignored their customers' wishes and welfare. They're not acting in a fiduciary interest in the case of SVB and Signature Bank. I worry about the banks coming down as a whole, a catastrophic collapse due to a variety of factors. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but that's why I have you on to tell me, what do you think?
I mean, from a business point of view, for someone that, you know, talks to people with money in banks, or someone that has friends that have people with money in banks, you know, I think everybody, all these recent closures and this, what's been happening in the banks and this, you know, the $250,000 number, and how do we stay below that $250,000? And I think you're right. In a way, the government, saying that the people at this one bank were protected in some ways it was a bad thing. And I know this is sort of controversial, but what banks would they protect if we saw, you know, two or three of the top five or six banks go down? Like, how, we don't have enough. We only have 110 to 130 billion in reserves, to protect in any situation. We don't have enough to really protect if a number of these banks, go down. So I think people are looking at different ways to hold, you know, excess money that they need for later on. And the hard part now, Dave, and you know, if you look at, let's just look at the traditional landscape. So you have the stock market's been pretty bad for the last 2 years. Gold, silver's been good. You know, we've had a nice big run, nice big uptick. You know, gold's in 2000, silver's in the, you know, $23-$24 range. So we've been doing pretty good, holding steady. Bonds, if you get into bonds right now, certain bonds, you're probably making a better return than you've made in, you know, 25 years. But a lot of people had bonds that they bought 2-3 years ago. And so they're just, you know, so if you bought bonds 2-3 years ago at 1.5% and then you're buying a bond today at 4.5%, your real return is probably around 3%. So that's not the best. You're not super excited about that. Real estate's struggling and even though long term, I do think it'll come back. The inherent costs day to day right now are very high, whether you are buying apartment buildings or you're buying office or you buy whatever it is. Not only are we having vacancy issues, but you're also having just the cost to rebuild is skyrocketed. So your day to day, when you put your pro forma together and say, okay, I'm going to buy this building here and this is my projected cost, like, all you could throw all those out the window because the costs of everything have gone up. So you look at your kind of four big asset classes and you just say to yourself, like, what's going to be good for the next 4 or 5 years? What's going to be safe? And it's really hard to gauge what's going to be safe. And that's why you're seeing all these fringe things come up. You're seeing, you know, besides crypto, but you're seeing, I don't know if you've heard this, but they're going to auction off Michael Jordan. Some guy got Michael Jordan's shoe that he won in every NBA championship game. So there's six shoes. He got one shoe that he wore. Okay. So there's six shoes, just one shoe. So it's six of one side. And they think this shoe collection is going to sell for $100 million, right?
Oh no, you got to be kidding me.
Right. Yeah, for shoes, for six shoes. What is that per shoe? Whatever that, someone will do the math on that. But anyways, like, this is where the world is going to, is that, you know, these shoe collections are a big deal because, and I think a lot of it has to do with that. Just, yeah, you have people that have obscene money, but there's probably someone that goes, is that 100 million safer than putting it in the stock market? Is it safer than some of the other things that I could it potentially double in 20 years? And I don't know. I don't know the shoe business. And, you know, obviously Michael Jordan's alive, and, you know, God forbid something happens to him, that thing probably goes up a lot and somebody pays a fortune for it. But this is the world we're living in, that people are looking for these other investments because they just can't, they just don't feel comfortable with the stuff that we used to buy for all these years. And I think that's Dave, that's the real issue today, is like, just people don't know where to put their money.
You know, that bingo, you just hit the nail on the head why someone would pay that much money for a tennis shoe. And by the way, don't
For
feel
tennis shoe.
sorry for Michael Jordan. He's looking to dump his NBA franchise, and he's going to get hundreds. What is he going to get? Probably
1.8 billion, they say, somewhere in the close to 2
two
billion.
billion, yeah.
And it's interesting that someone that's a lifer that made, I mean, he didn't actually make his fortune in the NBA. He made it from Nike and commercials, but someone like him, that really money's not an issue, that he's even thinking of selling, that he even thinks that the NBA is not a good place to be, and he's going to cash out. Because I mean, what's nothing's going to make a difference in his life. He just knows that that product is just, it's gone to the wayside and no one's interested, and the NBA is just not the product that it used to be. And so even him selling is sort of, it's sort of telling of what's happening out there in the economy.
Well, the domestic side of the NBA is down slightly, but when you add in the huge Chinese market, it's greatly increased, and LeBron James is the biggest beneficiary. I know I've researched this and I wrote about it, but I think there's a bigger message here. The fact that we're seeing so much turnover in professional franchises now, like the NBA and the NFL, and we're seeing more than we usually see. I mean, you could go years without a franchise changing hands, and that's not what's happening now. And what I'm wondering is this a vote against the economic health of the country, where discretionary income, people's ability to buy ancillary things like team T-shirts and stuff like that, is this a vote against the health of the economy that these owners want to sell?
I think it's a combination of that. I think it's a combination of a product where the salaries have gotten so high that it's, they have to put so many seats, get so many people in the stands, plus the TV rights. It's sort of just become an unattainable profitability. And, you know, when Steve Ballmer bought the Clippers, not to dive into sports stuff too much, but when he bought the Clippers for $2 billion, I believe, a few years back, their actual net revenue reported was like 110 million. Now, nobody in their right mind it would do that math in any business. Like, to if you're making 110 million, that franchise should be worth maximum 500 million, 600 million, 700 million. But to pay 2 billion for something that makes, you know, to do that math, I mean, you're basically, you know, you're looking at like a, you know, 4% return, or whatever that is, 5% return. So it's interesting that you're seeing this movement of wealth, where you're having these, you know, really elite, you know, tech billionaires buying in because, you know, it's just fun for them, and they don't care about money. And then you have, you know, sort of savvy business people getting out and moving away, because, you know, Michael Jordan might just, he might just see the writing on the wall that, like, this is, the people aren't going to be able to afford to spend, you know, $250 on a ticket plus a $20 hot dog and a pizza. I mean, this discretionary income that we've sort of built a lot of these sports franchises on, I think is gonna, it's gonna get much more difficult in the next coming years. I think things are getting more expensive. It's gonna get more difficult, and I think it's a sign of the times, Dave. I really do.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's symptomatic of what we're going through and what's anticipated that we're going to go through. And I think it's, well, let me put it to you this way. If you look at the Washington NFL franchise, there are rich people bidding for this franchise now. It's like four different bidders out there right now, and they'll make a bid, and the owner's just hanging on to it because the longer he waits, the more the money goes up.
He should just wait. He should just stick around for a long time. I know Bezos has been trying to get involved there too. But ultimately, I think Dave, one thing we have to just kind of to tie it all back in is it's really important right now that people are taking in this information, that they're looking at their options, that they're really keeping their accounts, keeping an eye on their accounts. And I think with what happened with the banks, it's going to hopefully scare some people into doing some good things with their finances, because there's a lot of people that probably had their money in a bank for a long time and they were making half a percent or whatever. Now that but there's accounts, there's banks out there that'll offer 4%. So I think hopefully what it does is it jars people into going, hey, you know what? Even though I'm not going to touch this money for a long time, I got to try to get a decent return, because things are going to get more expensive. And if you're not making a good return, some of the money you're going to put in safe places, but even just keeping an eye and being smart and looking at what's happening out there is going to be really important for everybody's future. Because I can tell you this, the cost of healthcare is not getting any cheaper. The cost of living is not getting any cheaper. Social Security is definitely a question mark. I don't care what anybody says. I think we're definitely in a position where, 15, 20 years, if not sooner, that, maybe it doesn't go away, but maybe they reduce the amount that they pay. They've already extended the age on Social Security once. Maybe they go, 5 or 6 years later. So I think that really people need to be conscious of what's happening with money. Be conscious of it, because it's not how it once was. You can't rely on your 401ks. You got to look at some of the options out there. And I think we've talked about a lot, and I think hopefully people are opening their eyes that we're in a brand new economy. And I think, gold and silver are going to play a big part in it. And even, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but I like where platinum's sitting. It's had some good movement this year. I think platinum, a lot of people think platinum's going to hit 1,200, 1,300 this year. So I think there's some things that people need to be looking at, and they need to change their mindset, because you can't just be a worker. You gotta look at your money nowadays. Unfortunately, you gotta wear a lot of hats. You gotta bring in money. You gotta put money to work. You gotta be an investor. In today's world, you gotta wear a lot of hats. You can't trust what the government's gonna do. You can't trust a financial advisor.
There you
You
go.
gotta you gotta keep your you gotta keep your options open.
See, I've been saying that too. Gold is the baseline. And of all the volatility that's out there, I was going to suggest something too when we were talking about the Washington football franchise. How long is it going to be until someone shows up with a pot of gold and says, "No, I'm not going to give you cash. That's worthless. I'll give you gold, but it'll be 50% less than what you're being offered because this will hold its value unlike the money you're taking."
I mean, that's why a lot of states take gold for tax. Utah and others, they obviously think about it. Utah, for instance, they've had this law in place for at least 5 years. All the money that they re all the tax payments, all the fines that they've received in gold over the last 5 years, when gold was sitting in the 1,400 range, now they're in the 2,000s. I mean, they're absolutely winning. They're absolutely winning with that exchange for them. So I think it's interesting. There are, I mean, listen, there's some billionaires that could buy that franchise. John Paulson, you could go down the list. There's some billionaires out there that could absolutely buy a franchise with gold. And I think it could be an interesting next step to see, how that would work. It's pretty simple. I mean, you could just decide on how many ounces, and that's it. You just transfer it over however you want to do it. A few billion dollars in gold would be a surprisingly large amount, but probably for some people a surprisingly small amount if you really look at it, just because gold's at 2,000 now. And so as it continues to go up, the weight of that's going to drop, and someone's going to be in a great position. So we are in an interesting time.
Well, I have another question along those lines here, because there's historical precedent for what I'm going to ask you. If the government is going to bring in CBDC and they seem to be determined to do it, that's a money system that doesn't really tolerate any competition. And so what I'm wondering, Do you think that precious metals could be outlawed for personal ownership?
Could they outlaw precious metals for personal ownership? Listen, I think that they could always try to do it, but we were fooled in the 20s, in the 1920s, when they told us we had to turn our gold in, and then they changed the price of gold up by 30%, went from 20 to the low 30s. So we were fooled back then. I don't think we're going to be fooled again. I don't think people are going to tolerate that, because I think that the knowledge is there. I think that people have the trust in the government, the trust in our currency, it's already been lost. So I don't think people are going to just willingly turn their gold in like they did back then. I think that, I mean, I can tell you this, our clients, they're not doing that. They're not turning their gold
Well,
in.
no,
Nobody
what
is.
I said to someone the other day, that an economist brought this up to me in a pre-air discussion, and I said, if they do that, I'm going to buy the Texas flag, come and take it, because I ain't giving up my gold, I ain't giving up my silver. To hell with you, I'm not going to follow that law. And I think you're absolutely right. But here's a question a lot of people ask me, and I think this goes right to the heart of the service you provide. Let's say that people do decide cash is a loser, cash is going to go away, or certainly it's going to be so devalued it's not worth having. So people are going to want to have liquidity and portability with gold and silver. I don't see people walking into Walmart and making gold-backed purchases.
Well, I mean, you could. I mean, it's not that hard
I was provoking you with that question on purpose.
No, I know what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, I think, we do. That is a question we get a lot too, David. And so, there's all different sizes of gold. There's a bar we sell a lot of. It's called a Valcambi bar, which they have 50 and 100 gram gold bars that can be broken off into 1 gram. So there's ways, and then obviously silver. Listen, there's a will, there's a way. People will figure out a way to trade with gold and silver, because I guarantee you, Walmart will want it if we get into that situation.
Yeah, do you are you operating on the notion though that central bank digital currency is just a matter of time?
It seems likely. Yeah, it does seem likely. It's a very strange strategy for the U.S. government to bring in another currency, unless they believe the dollar is failing. Because why would you bring in something to compete with your currency? It doesn't make sense.
Well,
You know,
you're being
China.
nice because I say Biden plans to destroy, his administration is destroying our currency.
Yeah, the only reason to bring in a competing currency is you're done with the old one. And it's a strange strategy. I don't think it's an effective one. I think we have to do what's necessary to make the dollar strong again, whatever way. And I threw out some ideas earlier in this, but I don't think bringing in this new currency is going to do anything but just destroy the value of the dollar.
Yeah, portability is going to be an important consideration for customers moving into precious metals. And how do I know? Because whenever I do something about gold and our failing banks, those are the comments I get. And then people make this ridiculous statement too, and I'll even answer this question for you. Oh, you can't eat gold. Well, you know what? Do you want to trade and barter the rest of your life? I mean, that's what you're really reducing yourself to if you think in that fashion.
Yeah. Well, it's like people that buy alcohol to trade and barter. It's not like you're going to drink the whole bottle of alcohol too. I mean, there's by the way, you can't eat gold. I don't recommend it, but you can eat gold. There has been, and if people Google it now, there's a lot of high-end steakhouses right now, and they'll charge you a premium. They'll throw some 24 karat gold on top of your steak, so you can eat it. But I think the really what we're looking at, Dave, is the idea of awakening, right? The idea of seeing what's out there, and just being realistic. I think you're very realistic when you talk to people. Is you look at kind of both sides, and you try to present, here's a good way to look at things. But today, in today's 2023, we have to realize that we're not going back to the way it
No.
was. The world is upset with us. The world is frustrated with us. with what we've done with our currency, and we're in a really big predicament right now. And time will only tell what's going to happen
So,
with our currency.
I'll just speak for myself personally, Dave Hodges in the Common Sense Show. I want to lead an exodus away from the dollar. And people say, well, you'll collapse it. I'm saying, well, it's going to happen anyway. So leave on your terms. And I've been very bullish on gold and silver. And obviously, because we have a working relationship, I've been very bullish on noble gold. So let's talk about when people inquire, what's the normal course of interaction? Because I get this question a lot too from people. Because here's what I do. I tell them, go to DaveHodgesGold.com, like I did the live read at the top of the show. And people say, well, what'll happen when I call in? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so you're gonna get they're gonna put you in touch with one of our representatives. One of the representatives you're gonna be in touch with is gonna know a lot about gold and silver, platinum, palladium, and they're just gonna let you ask a lot of questions about the process. They're gonna ask you can ask them questions about the product, you can ask about pricing, you can ask about anything really, ask about our reviews. So it's really a conversation is what how the process works. If you're doing an IRA, there's some simple forms we have on the website, and then we have an IRA team that will work with your representative to help you move the funds over from wherever you have them. So that obviously there's a few people involved. If you're just buying it directly, you're going to talk to that sales representative, and they're going to walk you through the process of how to buy gold and silver, where to ship it. All these great things, if you want it stored or shipped or whatever you decide. But really it's a conversation, and getting to know each other and to learn about the company and then to learn really about what we do and the products. And that's pretty much it. It's not going to be painful. It could be as long as short as you want it to be. But I do think the informational guys will tell you a lot if you do want to go that route. But I feel as though if you just call, mention Dave Hodges, you'll get a lot of the questions you may have right away answered. And then ultimately, we have people that call us and then they don't do anything for a few years, and then we have people that do it quicker. Or, everybody's got a different timetable for investments, and I think that's good. I think
No,
it's
I know, I
important.
agree. I want to just clarify though. Okay, people, we didn't give out the number, and you can also call Noble Gold and mention me. Just say you heard it here on the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges. And that number is 877-646-5347. That's 877-646-5347. Or you can get a no obligation information packet sent to you electronically by simply going to Dave Hodges Gold. Dot com. And people aren't going to pester you. They're not going to be calling you while you're eating dinner. You just look at it and just say, okay, I like kind of what I see here. I have some questions. And then that's when you call the number that's on the packet. And it's and Colin, I say this every time we talk. I remember the first time I closed a deal with Noble Gold, I literally had to close the deal. I mean, there was absolutely no pressure. I had to close my own. Is there anything else, Mr. Hodges? Well, yeah, I'd like to get some gold and silver now. Okay. All right. Okay,
Well,
we'll set that up for you.
I mean, our team is busy, right? We're busy, and we want to work with people that want to do it, and but we also want people to do it when they have answered all their questions and they feel good about it. And so we're not everyone's going to be in a mode of just having a conversation with you, and that's I feel that's the best way to have a company and to have this kind of relationship and to do this for the long
Yeah.
term. And that's what we're in this for. And I'm 45, and I want to do this for the next 20 years and at least, and then maybe I give this to my kids or who knows. But I'm in this for the long term, and
Yes.
so I want people to feel good about it when they make a purchase with us. And then obviously all the things shipping and getting all that stuff, and we ship as fast as humanly possible to get the metals out to you, and then we send you the tracking number, and there's all that process, and we walk you through all that and hold your hand, and but I think when you read the reviews, you'll see people, they like who they talk to, they like the representative, and it's going to feel like you're talking to someone that you've known for a long time.
You know, I have one more question for you, and this is strictly an opinion, so don't worry about being right or wrong, because I have my figure. I just wonder what yours is. When we look at the condition of the banks today, and you look at the various bank accounts people can have exclusive of retirement. So you have your checkbook, your savings, money market, whatever it is, okay? What percentage do you think people would, if they were wise, they would leave in the bank if they weren't living month to month? Would they leave 10%, 20, 50? What do you think a good figure would be?
Well, when you mean by bank, I mean there's ways to, you could move it with a you could put some of the money. What a lot of people have been doing, they've been putting money with their stockbroker that's has different types of insurance. So I think like if you're just looking at cash in general, like your traditional bank, maybe you have a little maybe 5% more than what you would that you need for bills over a few months. And then maybe the other 5% I'd put in one of these, if you're going to keep more, if you need more cash, I keep it in one of these brokerage accounts because not only the returns are higher, but you have, you have some protection there too. So I think that's, that's in today's day and age with everything being so easy to get in and out of, I don't know if you really need much more than that unless you are planning to, buy a business or you have some bigger plans and you need to have liquidity. I think the rest should be put to work.
Yeah, that's true. We just visited our banker last week, and we did a lot of what you're talking about here, where you have a middleman secure you a higher rate. So it might be like
Yeah, exactly.
5%, but you walk away with 3.8%.
Yeah,
And some of
and
it,
that's.
it's tied 3 months, 6 months to where you can touch it. But then some types of accounts you can have instant liquidity too.
Yeah, and I think you want to stagger those types of accounts. So, I think there's different ways to do it for that money because you do need some money day to day to live, and then the rest is really, like I said, is really the new mindset of getting it putting it out there and finding a safe place and then getting a return that you want and a return you need. It's not even what you want, it's what you need, right? I mean, everybody needs to make a return on that excess money so that they can get into retirement and live, the way that they want to live. And that, and that's, the first part of the American dream is to buy the house and the family and the white picket fence. But the second part is being able to have that enjoyable retirement. So it's, being able to do that today is trickier than it's ever been. And it does take more of an active mind, to get there
Yeah,
today.
whenever I talk to economists, I ask them the question I just asked you about banking, and I want you to know your answer came in as fairly conservative. In other words, you're not telling people to make radical moves, but you are saying you should have a few months plus a little extra, and then you
Yeah.
can do some other things that are kind of clever with your money that are out there if you go to the right banker.
Right.
Credit unions or banks to keep your remaining cash in?
Yeah, I mean, I don't I like the feeling of a credit union. I like that idea. I've gotten loans from credit unions. Some of them are fantastic. They offer some great rates. On one of the businesses I started, I got a loan from a credit union. It worked out really well. So I like that. I've had some, and they seem to have some good flexibility. Obviously, there's an argument. Do you want to be with the top, 5 to 8 banks? I would say you probably want to have a little bit of money there. So you're not, I think that the scary thing is every time there's a banking crisis, you don't want to be, go to the news because, oh, someone tells you another bank and you find out your bank was one of those banks. And whether it gets corrected or not, just that fear of not having access to your capital. So I think you got to be spread out in today's day and age. I don't think there's one right answer for this
Yeah, but
at
what you're
all.
talking about, though, is a pretty good antidote to what happened to 1929. I don't know if you ever knew this or not. I'm descended through the Ford family, and my mom's side, and they were wealthy going into the Depression. My mom was a little girl in the Depression, and they were just flat wiped out. Real estate, stock markets, where they put everything, and they didn't see it coming, and boy, Uncle Henry sure didn't help. And so they took a bath. They went from riches to rags overnight. And I think what you're talking about here is basically you're saying if people just take these reasonable precautions, spread out, have different aspects going on with your bank, you're not looking at a situation where you're going to lose everything overnight.
Right, exactly. That's the key. It's really just keep being active with what you're doing and not having all your eggs in one basket, which is what I've always sort of talked about. And I know it feels good to have the one banker, right? To have, but I do think, having things spread out, Because at the end of the day, that banker, they have a job to do. Their job is to keep your money there. And then they may be the nicest, most, you know, have all good intentions, but they don't control the
Absolutely.
at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like, be careful. And you know, we've all heard these horror stories where, you know, people got involved with the wrong one. And, you know, and a lot of times these bankers have access to a lot of things, a lot of accounts. So you just want to be cautious.
Exactly.
And just realize that they could have all the best intentions in the world, but ultimately, you know, they don't control the bank, which is the great thing about what we do, Dave, is that, like, when I ship gold, you know, you're buying gold from me, I ship it to you. You don't have to worry about me, right? You don't have to worry about, you got it. You got the product, whether it's in the depository, it's held by a third party. That's a third party. It's insured by Lloyd's. You don't have to worry about Noble Gold. It's you are control, whether it's in your home or it's in the deposit, you own it. It's yours. We don't own anything. We don't have any fractionalized gold at Noble Gold. We don't have any of that stuff.
You don't get to print 9 bars for every bar you get.
No.
Yeah.
No,
okay. All right. Sorry. Bad joke. Well, Colin, we're out of time, but I wanted to give out the contact information again. The number to call Noble Gold and use my name. Let them know that you heard it here on our show, Dave Hodges, okay, the Common Sense Show. But that number is 877-646-5347. Or you can have a packet sent to you electronically, no obligation packet. Go to DaveHodgesGold.com. Colin, always a pleasure to have you on. You're always so filled with great information.
Thanks, Dave. Nice to talk to you, too, and looking forward to talking again in the future.
Take care.
All right, thanks.